Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And now we continue our fall election series, 30 Issues in 30 Days. This week, we continue in the series to assess Trump administration policies from multiple points of view. While so much of the media focuses on a single hot-button issue at a time, recently, of course, it's been the Kavanaugh nomination, our 30 Issues series is kind of a safe space for exploring other policy changes that have impact on people's lives. Last week, we talked about the economy and trade. In coming days, we'll talk about labor, environmental, and criminal justice issues. And today, right now, we'll get three points of view on Trump's policies toward the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Probably the president's best-known act came last December when he recognized Jerusalem as Israel's capital, something other countries have not done, while the status of East Jerusalem remains in dispute. But Trump didn't just say he was doing it because it's Israel's right to name their capital city. He also framed it as in the best interest of the United States and the peace process.
I've judged this course of action to be in the best interests of the United States of America and the pursuit of peace between Israel and the Palestinians. This is a long overdue step to advance the peace process and to work towards a lasting agreement.
So is it really, or can it function that way? We'll explore that in a minute. That was the president's last December. Since then, he has come down hard on the Palestinians in a number of ways, cutting more than $200 million in support to a UN agency that provided humanitarian aid to Palestinian refugees, $25 million to East Jerusalem hospitals, ended a program that brought Israeli and Palestinian children together through sports and other activities, and closed the Palestinian mission in Washington, D.C., the PLO mission. But if all these moves seem just intended to help Israel and hurt the Palestinians rather than move toward reconciliation, Trump argues it's the opposite. Just last month, he predicted that he and Jared Kushner would have a fuller peace plan proposal in about 4 months, with the basic terms being subject to an agreement by both sides.
Now, the bottom line, if the Israelis and the Palestinians want one state, that's okay with me. If they want two states, that's okay with me. I'm happy if they're happy. I'm a facilitator. I want to see if I can get a deal done so that people don't get killed anymore.
Also last month, the Israeli business paper Globes reported that the Trump administration has offered the Palestinians $5 billion in new aid if they negotiate with Israel. But Trump's Middle East envoy, Jason Greenblatt, denied the story. The Trump administration is also considering its role in fighting the international anti-Israel movement known as BDS, which stands for Boycott, Divest, and Sanction. Even here in Blue, New York, if you didn't know this, Governor Cuomo has issued an order for state agencies to stop doing business with companies that support BDS. What, if anything, should be done at the federal level? Politically, Trump is obviously extremely unpopular among Palestinians, but Israeli Jews and American Jews are different from each other on general Trump approval. For example, a global Gallup poll taken at the end of Trump's first year in office showed positive views of U.S. leadership declined globally by about 50% last year. It only went up in four countries. Israel was one of them, up 14% to two-thirds of Israelis supporting U.S. leadership under Trump, similar to during the George W. Bush administration. It was lower during Obama. Among American Jews, however, the Trump presidency at 1 year had the support of only a quarter of American Jews, according to a Morning Consult poll that measured by religious affiliation. And that's not just about Israel, of course, but it still shows a difference that could matter to Republican support in the midterms, which is the context of this series, and for Trump going forward. So with me now are three guests to discuss Trump's policies toward the Israeli-Palestinian conflict: Morton Klein, president of the Zionist Organization of America; Jane Eisner, editor of the mostly liberal Jewish American news organization The Forward; And Muin Rabbani, senior fellow with the Institute for Palestine Studies, a leading international nonprofit focused on Palestinian affairs. Thanks so much to all three of you for joining us. Welcome to WNYC today.
Thank you.
Thanks, and nice to be back.
Good to be with you.
And let me get all of your takes first on the big picture of what the Trump administration's goal is with respect to the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. Is it simply to show unwavering support for the Israeli right with everything we just listed, or is it his particular way of trying to get to yes on an Israeli-Palestinian deal, or something else? Morton Klein from the Zionist Organization of America, would you start?
Yes, I think it is high time. It's been 25 years since the Oslo so-called peace agreements were signed, and for 25 years, America has ignored the fact that the Palestinian Authority is promoting hatred and violence in every aspect of their culture, teaching people to hate Jews and Israel in their schools, media, speeches. They name school streets and sports teams after Jew killers. They pay Arabs to murder Jews. So finally, this administration is saying enough is enough of 25 years of absolutely no interest in making a deal with Israel. Remember, they were offered a state at least twice by Ehud Barak and Ehud Olmert, two prime ministers. They said no each time. And I think now there's a real chance of peace moving in the right direction when the Arabs know that their rejectionism and their outrageous behavior, violating every aspect of Oslo, will no longer be tolerated. No more money, no more acceptance of their false narrative. And I'm really hopeful that this will cause the Palestinian Authority to consider moving in the right direction toward peace, because they won't accept, America won't accept their phony lies anymore.
Jane Eisner, same question.
Well, honestly, Brian, I don't know what the Trump administration policy is. I'm not sure that he does. He can't even say whether he's in favor of a one-state solution or a two-state solution. A two-state solution being the policy of the American administration's 4 years, but also the policy of the Israeli government and the Palestinian Authority, never mind the general agreement of most Western nations. There, we are no closer to any peace deal than we were, than we are closer to a deal with North Korea or the Mexican Wall. And, you know, I think, frankly, there's another constituency that we haven't mentioned here, and that is Christian evangelicals. White Christian evangelicals are, I believe, the ones pushing the policy to move the embassy to Jerusalem, to crackdown so hard on the Palestinians.
Muin Rabbani, same question. Is Trump just doubling down on support for Israel because he's aligning himself with the way Morton Klein just described things, or is this his way of trying to get to yes on an Israeli-Palestinian deal, in your opinion?
Well, I think the Trump administration has gone beyond the traditional American embrace of Israel to an uncritical and unconditional embrace of the extreme Israeli right, and is, to the extent, you know, on the ground, implementing policies that more or less conform to what Morton Klein would like to see, which is essentially that Palestinians as a people don't really exist. And to the extent they exist, they don't really have rights. And to the extent that they may have rights, those are subordinated to Israel. And so the idea is that, you know, the longest occupation that exists in the world today is no longer an occupation, because this is not the West Bank. This is Judea and Samaria. Refugees don't exist because we can redefine them. Israel has exclusive rights to sovereignty in Jerusalem and so on. And so rather than waiting about, you know, to see whether Trump's so-called peace team does or does not announce a plan, which I don't think is coming, look at what this administration is doing on the ground, which is adopting and implementing policies that reflect the principle that might makes right. And again, what's being proposed to the Palestinians, which is basically submit or starve, is not something that I think is going to work.
So, Morton Klein, are you anticipating a discreet peace plan from the Trump administration in this four-month window? He said that last month, so it would be about 3 months from now, I guess. Is that a real thing? And if so, would you expect it to look like the deal that Yasser Arafat rejected in 2000 or something different?
Yes, I think there's going to be a real proposal for some sort of plan. I frankly think it's premature. When you have 25 years of the Palestinian Arabs promoting hatred and violence and now paying Arabs to murder Jews, I'm very concerned about establishing a state where these are mainstream policies and they're there. And this gentleman who spoke completely, made statements completely false. I support Palestinian Arab rights, legitimate rights, absolutely. Human rights, absolutely. I've worked in all sorts of human rights and civil rights marches and demonstrations. But also the issue of refugees. They've been in UNRWA camps now for 70 years. There's only
20,000 UN Refugee Agency.
Correct, thank you. There's only 20,000 refugees left from those who left in 1948. That's all that's left, and yet they're claiming that there are millions of refugees, which is not true. And even the occupation, it's important to understand, Israel's given away all of Gaza, 40% of Judea and Samaria. That's where 98% of the Palestinian Arabs live under their own rule. They have their own media, their own parliament, their own textbooks, their own schools. The only thing they don't control fully is security. And if terrorism would stop, then Israel would end dealing with security there. As only this week, two innocent fathers and mothers were murdered by a Palestinian Arab, and he's now going to be getting a check every month for the rest of his life because he's murdered two Jews.
But then, Jane Eisner, in the context of the kinds of positions that Morton Klein was just articulating that I think the Trump administration would not disagree with in any way, what's the peace plan that can emerge that makes the Palestinians come to yes while they're being demonized that way, even if everything that was said is true?
I think most experts agree that the outlines of a peace plan have been known for many, many years. And you can hear this from Israelis and Palestinians. What is missing is trust and the ability to trust one another to take the big, big leap that both communities have to take in order to fully recognize each other and live side by side.
So to keep this on Trump, what are you expecting? And we heard Mr. Rabbani doesn't really expect anything. Mr. Klein does expect something to come in the form of a discrete Trump peace plan. Is it going to look like the 2000 land for peace deal under Clinton that almost got there but didn't?
Honestly, I don't have any inside information. I was just speaking with people at the Council on Foreign Relations about this last week who do have inside information, and nobody knows what this will be. I don't see what incentives the Palestinians have. But frankly, I also don't see what incentives the Israelis have to compromise, because they got a whole lot from President Trump without having to give up anything. I also just want to make one point, Brian, to add to what you said before in terms of popularity.
Hold that for a minute, because I want to get to that as a discrete piece in a couple of minutes, especially with respect to American Jews versus Israeli Jews in that respect. But Mr. Rabbani, this report last month in an Israeli business paper that the Trump administration is offering $5 billion to the Palestinians to return to peace talks with Israel, the administration denies it, but the premise is that the Palestinian side refuses to negotiate. Is that the case?
Well, the Palestinians certainly refuse to negotiate under the conditions that are being offered by the Trump administration, which is that the Trump administration is trying to take a number of core issues off the table. For example, seeking to resolve the whole issue by Jerusalem by basically claiming Israel has exclusive rights of sovereignty there, ceasing to refer to the occupied Palestinian territories as occupied territories per a directive to the State Department, by seeking to redefine Palestinian refugees as effectively not being refugees. And if I may, on this issue, The idea that the descendants of refugees remain refugees until the underlying political issue is resolved is entirely consistent with both international law and international practice. There's nothing unusual here. If you look, for example, at the case of Afghanistan, it's very simple. But more importantly, I think what this administration is trying to do is to basically starve the Palestinians into submission, then offering them some economic incentives to come back to the table and renounce their inalienable rights. And quite clearly, that's not something that's going to happen. And if they do find a Palestinian leader who's prepared to play along with that, I think he'll be representing only himself.
I want to ask you each about the issue of BDS, the Boycott, Divest, and Sanction Israel movement. Jane Eisner, what is the administration doing? And we're going to go around the table. What would you each like them to be doing with respect to BDS? I saw that there is a bill in Congress, though I don't know that it has a lot of chance of passing, that would do something similar with the federal government that I guess Cuomo has done in New York, which is not having the state do business with companies that support the BDS movement. Where's Trump on this, Jane?
It seems that he's very supportive of these efforts to demonize this movement. I myself am not a supporter of it for many reasons, but I do think that is something that we need to engage. It is a nonviolent attempt to change a situation. And I think both from its standpoint and its tactics, I have trouble with it. But I also think that it's problematic for governments to start getting involved, to create blacklists for organizations that might only just be expressing a point of view.
What standpoint and tactics do you most object to?
Well, I'm not in favor of academic boycotts at all. I just think it is antithetical to what it means to be in favor of free inquiry. And that bothers me a lot. I think that the end game of the movement is very fuzzy. And many people who are in favor of it aren't willing to say that it's just about ending the occupation. Many of them say it's about ending Israel as a Jewish state, or won't affirm Israel's right to have a Jewish state. And that's where I have to draw the line.
Mr. Rabbani, how do you see the place of BDS in the movement for Palestinian rights? And do you feel it's constructive? And how do you see Trump with respect to it?
Well, what I find interesting here is that throughout you have people who say, you know, where's the Palestinian Gandhi? Why can't Palestinians adopt nonviolent means of resisting Israeli occupation and so on? And, you know, there is a whole history of Palestinian nonviolent resistance to Israel. But more importantly, when you now get the BDS movement, irrespective of what you may think of it, it is demonstrably a peaceful form of resistance to Israeli occupation and Israeli repression. And it's interesting that many of those who have been calling for peaceful Palestinian resistance are now, you know, faced with this movement. They want to criminalize and outlaw it, which to me demonstrates that for them, the agenda is not reconciliation, is not promoting peaceful Palestinian or nonviolent Palestinian opposition, but the real agenda is ensuring permanent Israeli supremacy over the Palestinians and criminalizing and outlawing any form of Palestinian opposition to Israeli rule.
Mr. Klein, what about those points from your point of view? Mr. Rabbani is arguing this is sort of politics as usual, to boycott something, to put political pressure, to divest. You know, the city of New York is divesting from companies that deal in fossil fuels, or place economic sanctions if you think a country is doing things that are oppressive. Why is the BDS movement, in your opinion, worthy of, you know, distinct denunciation?
Because the premise of BDS is that the Israelis refuse to make a peace and the Arabs want peace. The Palestinian Arabs have refused to negotiate for years. Netanyahu has begged them to come to the table for years and years. They won't even come and negotiate. And he said everything is on the table. They've been offered a state. The Palestinian Arabs in 1937, 47, 01, 08, 2014, they've turned it down every time if it means accepting Israel. So clearly their interest is not statehood. It is Israel's destruction, and that's why they have not accepted a state all this time. That's why a peace plan can't work, because they won't accept anything if it means accepting Israel. And to say this is Palestinian Arab land, why is it called Palestine? It's a Roman name. If this was really Arab land, why isn't it named, given a Roman name, an Arab name like Saudi Arabia or Yemen or Egypt or such? So there shouldn't be a boycott, because the Arabs are the ones who won't negotiate, promote hatred and violence. Abbas only in the last few months have said the Israelis want to destroy the Al-Aqsa Mosque and they want to come there with their filthy feet. So he's inciting people to hate Jews, to hate Israel, to promote terrorism, and he pays them to murder Jews. For God's sakes, who's here at fault here for trying to make peace, or for not trying to make peace?
Your differences in three different positions there on BDS, to be sure, are clear. How do you see, Mr. Klein, very briefly, Trump on BDS? Is he taking action?
Donald Trump has pleaded with the Arabs to negotiate. What is BDS trying to do? You would think it means let's negotiate and try and hack out some sort of deal where both parties can live in peace. But if they won't sit down and negotiate, if they promote hatred and violence, if they pay Arabs to murder Jews, it's not possible. Trump is totally against BDS because it is only there to try and demonize Israel, not to try and have a resolution.
On the domestic politics, Jane Eisner, I mentioned the polls from around New Year's that you cited in one of your articles showing that Israeli Jews have about a 67% Trump approval rating, while American Jews support him at only 25%. And I'll say again that that's an overall approval domestically. It's not just about Israel, but why the disconnect, and how do you think American Jews regard Trump with respect to Israeli and Palestinian policy, and does it matter?
It's interesting because those numbers don't even tell the whole story. First of all, even though Trump's approval rating among Israelis is very high, guess what? Barack Obama's approval rating among Israelis at the end of his first term was higher. So I think a lot of this is very temporal. Secondly, we're seeing not only the traditional liberal democratic leaning response to Trump when it came to Middle East politics or anything, but just in the last few weeks, two very prominent Republican Jewish donors, Les Wexner and Seth Klarman, have not only distanced themselves from Trump, but said that they're going to be pouring money into Democratic races. So I think we're seeing a minority of American Jews. Unfortunately, we're seeing a breakdown according to religion, too, tend to be Orthodox, obviously have a great deal of power in the White House right now, but are not at all representative, not only of Democratic-leaning Jews, but increasingly of Republican-leaning Jews as well.
Mr. Klein.
The Israelis, when it comes to Trump, only care about his position on Israel, not domestic policy. American Jews are very concerned about all sorts of domestic policies with which they disagree when it comes to Donald Trump. This has been true when it came to George Bush or any Republican president. American Jews, a small proportion of American Jews support any Republican president. Even Ronald Reagan, who they liked the most, only 37% supported Ronald Reagan. And that was historically high. Or not historically, but certainly the last 40 years or so. If you would ask American Jews what do they think of Trump when it comes to Israel, I think you would have a tremendously, a much, much larger number when it comes to that. And by the way, the numbers in Israel now I just saw was 90% supporting Donald Trump, much higher than it ever was with Obama. And I might add, after Obama's term ended, when he had publicly stated that the Western Wall, the Jewish section, the Temple Mount, all historically Jewish areas are occupied Arab territory, the support among Israelis for Obama dropped dramatically.
Jane, you're shaking your head.
Well, I think that The numbers that I cited came from a very, very recent poll, I think from last week, from the Pew Research Center, and I trust those numbers. And they did not show 90% of Israelis. I think they showed 67 or 69%. Israelis have, popular opinion has increased in favorability to Trump, in that Israel is almost alone in the world.
Can I get all three of your reactions very briefly as we run out of time to the breaking news this morning that Nikki Haley has resigned as UN ambassador? I think we might have a clip to play, but some of the copy that I have here says she says the U.S. is being respected again. She's a believer in term limits as her reasoning for leaving, that she's not running for president in 2020. She also called Jared Kushner, who of course is the one who is, you know, reputedly leading the Israeli-Palestinian peace efforts on behalf of the Trump administration, a hidden genius. Mr. Abani, Nikki Haley, in the context of the conversation we're having today?
Well, what more need one say than that she considers Jared Kushner a hidden genius? I mean, that kind of says it all. Look, during her period as UN ambassador, Haley proved to be extraordinarily vulgar when it came to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Was, I think, a faithful representative of the Trump administration approach of being a bull in a china shop and trying to create the fantasy world that Morton Klein was talking about. And in terms of the U.S. being respected again, well, as you and your listeners may recall, when the U.S. took the position that of recognizing Israeli sovereignty, exclusive Israeli sovereignty in Jerusalem, in violation of international law and seven decades, and in sharp contrast to seven decades of U.S. policy on the issue, the U.S. lost a Security Council vote 14-1. And what's significant here is that all of Washington's closest allies voted against the U.S. on that issue. So if that's respected again, good luck.
30 seconds for each of you, and then we're out of time, and we have presidential historian Michael Beschloss standing by next. Mr. Klein?
Yes, she's been the greatest friend for strong U.S. Israel relations since Jean Kirkpatrick. It's a terrible loss for strong U.S. Israel relations. She's made clear such things as, if Jerusalem is so holy to Muslims, why is it never mentioned in the Koran? She has cited polls that no other ambassador has ever cited, such as in the last year, a poll showing that 66% of Palestinian Arabs support terrorism and violence against Israelis. She's told the whole truth, no matter what the truth was, with tremendous courage. It's a great loss.
Ms. Eisner.
Well, as you could see, I think she has been the darling of those who agree with the Trump administration's global strategy and presence. I think that she tried really hard to represent that. Perhaps it just got too much for her.
Jane Eisner, editor of the Jewish American news organization, The Forward. Morton Klein, president of the Zionist Organization of America. Moeen Rabbani, senior fellow with the Institute for Palestine Studies. Thank you all so much for engaging in this conversation.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, Michael Beschloss, coming right in after this.